different flavors and perspective of all the efforts that are going on out there to promote child health development and well-being. Our next presenter, Bernard Geyer, is a Senville Krieger Professor of Children's Health in the Department of Population, Family, and Reproductive Health at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. His areas of research include MCH planning and administration, low birth weight and infant mortality, child development, pediatric care, the delivery of immunization services, childhood injury and injury prevention, and urban health. And he, again, is going to be putting all this in a broader policy perspective.
Thank you. I think it must be an honor to be the last speaker on the last panel on the last day. How do we do this? Okay. I don't have any commercial conflicts or interests to disclose, but I did want to say that this project was funded by the Partnership for America's Economic Success through the Pew Charitable Trusts and by the Zandel and Isabel Krieger Fund. And that slide also includes our co-author team, myself, Sai Ma, Holly Grayson, Kevin Frick, Deb Perry, Alyssa Wigton, Jennifer McIntosh, and Tam Leventhal. Thank them all for their contributions. Well, you've often heard it said that children are our future. At best, of course, this is an overused cliche, and at worst, it's disingenuous. It's used by people who are doing photo ops and really don't mean what they say. In fact, the U.S. is disinvesting in children. The total federal investment I think about 2004, these data are for, is 1.6% of GNP, and is it being estimated to decline by 14 to 29% from 2006 to 2017. So this is not a good situation. We know that the deficits that are currently have been built up in the federal budget, in fact, should be seen as borrowing from the next generation. It's the next generation that will pay these deficits. These estimates were all done before the current stock market collapse and financial crisis, so that the looming financial crisis is going to make have even more impact on children in the future. So this project was done to develop a rationale for thinking about investing in early childhood. It fits very closely with the work that was just talked about from Nemours Foundation. There are several premises to this work that I just want to bring quickly to your attention. I'm not going to go into any of these in any detail. But the notion is that child health, of course, is more than just the absence of disease. It's about child well-being, that health is linked to development and learning. In this work, we take a lifespan perspective. The notion, of course, is that what happens early in life has implications across the lifespan, and that's, in fact, where the large costs may come later on. And we're talking about more than access to medical care. Also, we very much take a public health approach in this work, and that is that child health is more than about individual health. It's shaped by multiple determinants, social, environmental, economic, biological, and that there are societal cost consequences, and that's part of what we wanted to look at in this work. The work is very much influenced by the kind of thinking that was done in this volume from Neurons to Neighborhoods, published by the Board on Children, Youth, and Families, that focuses primarily on brain development, but the model is one that can really be applied more broadly. So this specific work that I'm going to report on today was set up to look at the short and long-term impact of interventions in young children under the age of five, and including during the pregnancy of the mother. We wanted to focus on some areas that people would find relevant. So the work looks at four areas of early child health: exposure to tobacco, the development of obesity, early childhood injury, and mental health in this young age group. And the work itself is a systematic review of the literature. We looked at more than 10 years of literature. We wanted to document research studies that looked at the magnitude of the problem. What's the burden of these conditions on children? What are the cost implications of these conditions for both childhood and later life? And then we searched for effective interventions that reported monetary benefits so that we could try to build a database on kind of what would be the benefits of early investment. So let me go quickly through the four areas and just hit some of the highlights of the work. This research is IMPRESS, and part of the publication will have evidence tables of all the studies that were reviewed as part of the work. So, of course, no one in this audience is not familiar with the impact of smoking on children, but we're looking only at very young children. So their exposure is mostly through prenatal exposure. About 10% of babies are estimated to be exposed through their mother smoking. Environmental tobacco exposure, depending on studies, is estimated anywhere between 25 and 50%. And then, of course, teens smoke, and teens can be both parents and exposed younger children in the household. There are estimates now of the extra costs for prenatal care and complications due to maternal smoking, and those are very large numbers, $4 billion a year. The direct medical costs of all pediatric conditions attributable to prenatal smoking is estimated to be about $8 billion a year. And it's estimated that we could save about $1 billion a year in direct medical costs with only a 15% reduction in parental smoking. So this is an area of big impact and big potential gains. And we developed this kind of scheme to present these findings by looking at where are the potential interventions. So they could be in the preconception or pregnancy. They could be during infancy and childhood. And we really haven't focused much on adolescence. I don't want to say much about it. And of course, we didn't look at all at interventions during adulthood, but wanted to include adulthood here because there are consequences during adulthood. And then we looked at the level of intervention, whether it's at the individual level, the family level, the community level, or at national state level. And the big message to take away from this tobacco slide is that we have a lot of experience with intervening around tobacco exposure. There are interventions at all these different levels and across all the age categories. So this is an area where we have a large body of work, and it's pretty easy to make the case for early investments and for having positive impacts. Now, what you're going to see from the rest of the slides and the figures is that we have much less evidence in other areas. So obesity, of course, is an emerging area of child health. Again, the work from Nemours is very important in this area. This will be familiar to all of you. The levels of obesity, though, are really troubling in the preschool age group. They've tripled over 20 years from about 5 to 14%. It was estimated in 2006 that 17 to 18% of school-age children are overweight. Of course, the patterns of obesity have lifelong consequences, so that 50 to 80% of overweight children and teens become obese adults, and the implications are lifelong, so that you're well aware that diabetes and other cardiovascular diseases, pregnancy complications, and so forth. You'll see more and more of these kinds of newspaper articles on relating things like heart disease to overweight in early childhood. And again, there's really good data on the costs of the obesity epidemic, both in childhood and then estimating those costs across the lifespan. And again, you're beginning to see newspaper clippings about the high price, the high cost of these conditions in later life. Unfortunately, there aren't many good interventions. So when we looked for cost-effective interventions related to obesity in preschool age, remember, we're looking at very young children, we find very few. There's obviously observational studies that look at this problem in early childhood and across the lifespan. There are some family interventions in the preschool ages in preschool education and parental education. There are some teacher curriculums. There are really no national or state. I think the experience of the Nemours group in Delaware is going to be the first national work in this area. There was some work in Arkansas on measuring BMI in school-age kids, not in preschoolers. So this is an area that needs to have more attention before we can build a really strong policy case, and everyone wants to see that come forward. The third area that we worked on was injuries. This is a very large problem. Injuries, as many of you know, are the leading cause of death, hospitalization, emergency room visits, and disability in childhood. The cost of injuries has been well documented and go well into the billions of dollars. The one good thing about injury is we've made tremendous progress in injury prevention, so that the rate of injury mortality and injury incidence has actually declined over the last 20 years. And we've developed lots of public health approaches to injury that bring together the medical, the social, the environmental, the community, engineering, etc., in creating effective childhood prevention programs. And that's reflected in the prevention literature. We have lots of interventions. Many of these are well documented with good study designs, lots of good economic data behind them, so that you can point to good, well-documented interventions across, you know, in early childhood and across the lifespan. So finally, then, mental health disorders. Here, the problem is a little bit different. We all recognize the importance of mental health in children and adults, but in fact, even in these early age groups, the estimates are that between about 3 and 7% of preschoolers have some sort of externalizing behavior condition, and 3 to 6% have some internalizing behavior problem. The costs of these early child mental health problems are not well documented. Just about the best study we found was from the UK, where they actually came up with some societal estimates of the cost of conduct disorders in early childhood. But again, not enough data. And when we looked for interventions, what we found was mostly small-scale clinical studies. So again, not a very convincing or powerful literature focusing on early childhood mental health services. Lots of studies, but not a powerful body of literature, not like the smoking interventions or others. So what did we conclude from all this? I've got three slides that wrap up this presentation. And this report is available as a policy brief from the Partnership for America's Economic Success. I'm sorry, I don't have the website here. But here is, in a nutshell, what we found from this this work. One is that these four conditions constitute an enormous burden of health problems for children. They're high prevalence, they're expensive, both in early childhood and across the lifespan. And we estimated for each one of them what that contribution is. It's hard to add these up and come up with a single estimate across, you know, all the conditions. But it's likely that about half of all children, in fact, suffer from one or another of these conditions or exposures. And the economic burden could be estimated to be about $100 billion across the lifespan for a single-year cohort of children. So if we had one single-year cohort, there are about 4 million children born a year in the United States. If 2 million of them are exposed to either tobacco, have a serious injury, a mental health problem, or become obese, and we project the ultimate medical costs and other related costs across their entire lifespan, we're talking about serious amounts of money. So this is the potential for intervention, if we can convince people that, can make a strong case and convince people. What we learned about interventions is that the current state of the literature is that they're uneven. The best evidence comes from tobacco control and injury prevention. There are a few studies of obesity. We need much more. We certainly need good data that brings into the policy arena the cost benefit. This is what policymakers are convinced by, and we certainly need better data in areas like mental health promotion. Finally, the recommendations that we would make are clearly that to promote more high-quality intervention studies that would demonstrate these long-term effects. Most epidemiologists, are not used to doing studies across the lifespan. They're not easy to do. We know that there will be a national children's study, and hopefully some of these concerns will be built into that, but we can't even be sure of that. We need to build an argument for societal investment in early childhood. I think everybody on this panel would agree with that, and we have to build it in such a way that we can convince people that there will be a return on investment with reduced lifetime costs and improvement in both child health, development, and education. So thank you very much.
Oh, I want to thank the panel and all the speakers. Very fascinating talks and a lot of food for thought of really where we need to go as a nation in looking at some of these issues and how we can better promote just overall child development, health, and well-being, and then some potential strategies, and some folks who had a lot of community-based and wealth of experience of working at those levels. So I'm going to open it up for discussion. So if there are any questions, and I'll ask all the panel members to be available to answer the questions. So any questions, please? Yes?
It's interesting. My name is Carolyn Belcher. About 19 years ago, I was director of the developmental evaluation initiative. Oh, really?
Right. So we, it's really interesting to see how the program has evolved. Uh-huh. I guess it sounds like University of South Dakota is not as involved in it as it used to be, but I know a few years ago we used to go out to the family fighting groups, the different communities and provide those local services. So maybe that grows.
Yes.
Yes?
I was wondering for the first two presenters who talked about the early developmental child intervention screening, if you ever have caregivers coming back to you to say, you know, services were recommended and they weren't put into place by the school district or they were denied by health insurance, and if you get that kind of feedback, what do you then do to help those families?
Well, we're just starting to do the follow-up. I think Healthy Beginnings is much further ahead in terms of doing actual follow-up to find out what happened to the referrals and whether they were able to successfully engage. But we do follow some families, and typically what we try